Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Rocket Mortgage. Confidence. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Why can't clients get approved in minutes, not weeks? Or make adjustments to their rate and term in real time? Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans answered those questions and more. It gives you the confidence to buy a home or refinance your existing loan. Fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. That's right. That's what Rocket Mortgage does. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. What else do you need to know? And again, these guys support the show and are great sponsors. So, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam.
Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Daredevil Events and Corolla Drinks present Rock at the Shop, featuring Loxy.
Oh, man, I hear you begging, please. Ain't my decision to be kind.
July 29th at South Bay Customs in El Segundo, California. Loxy. Plus, the smoking kills.
Just another Southern California.
Rock at the Shop, July 29th.
And all the pretty girls start to look the same.
Corolla Drinks presents Rock at the Shop with Loxy and the smoking kills. Hosted by comedian Matt Edgar. July 29th at South Bay Customs, 115 Penn Street, El Segundo, California. Get your tickets now at CorollaDrinks.com. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, documentarian Matt Schrader. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and a visit from Dave Damashek. And now, technically he's still on academic probation at Valley College, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on a mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball Brian.
Freezing glacier.
Dave Damashek in studio.
What's the poop, Ace Carolla and Company?
The podcast is The Poop, the Dave Damashek football program. New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday on iTunes.
It's red hot right now. I just talked to Melvin Gordon, Carson Palmer. Football season is nigh, Ace.
It is. It is upon us. Last night, I went out for the baby doll run up the bill.
Oh.
Dinner with Cousin Sal and Jimmy and Daniel and Bill Simmons, the sports guy, and that was about it. It was a lighter crowd.
Were truffles flying? Were towers ordered?
New personal best?
Although, Gary, I have talked
about towers sent?
Going to that restaurant and seeing if that chip that had the caviar on it was stuck on the wall. Did we ever figure that one out? Dylan, I feel like we had that discussion a long time ago. With you, did we ever figure that one out? No? Yes? No? Come yes?
Hold on.
Remember about a year and a half ago, I was saying yes?
Yeah, I went to Republic.
Right.
And started looking around before they told me to leave. I have not been back yet.
Yet. Yet means ever, though, right? Because it's been a year?
Yet means yes. You're right.
All right. There's a thing that people have, Dave Damashek.
Yeah.
A lot of people suffer from this, which is, those of you who are married understand this very clearly, maybe too clearly, where you do the what's wrong with the cable, where's the cable guy, how long has this cable been this way, and they go, I called him. And you go, great, where is he? He didn't pick up. And you go, good, how long ago was that? 4 months. And you go, okay, we're at zero. We're at zero. There's a thing, everybody, don't check a box when nothing got done. The deal, it's not call the cable guy, check the box. It's fix the cable, check the box.
By any means necessary.
A lot of people have a check that box. Mm-hmm. Dylan's proud to report that he went to the restaurant, didn't get to the room where the chip with caviar was stuck against the facade, the brick facade, and now it's been a year. And we got
the
nothing.
The buck stops here is one of the cliches of the last 100 years or so that you think would take root, and each person looking back at themselves in the mirror would take stock in themselves. Instead, we are a society of like, don't blame me.
We're not in stock taking time.
Well, I think there's a lot of people, and I've dealt with this my whole life, where you go, I called the guy. What happened? I left a message. When was that? 4 years ago. Like, okay, that we're not anywhere. And as a matter of fact, I don't even know where you have the momentum. Like, you're coming at me like you're facing me and acting like I'm going to feel someone tap on my shoulder. And I go, what? Who's that? And I turn around. There's a cable guy standing there. And you go, touche. And then you go into the next room.
Boy, do I feel foolish.
Your answer is sort of worse than what I'm saying. I'd kind of prefer I just spaced out, let's call him. Mm-hmm. But I'm getting pushback as if it's actually an answer.
Yeah. An indignant nothing.
We're so farther behind now.
Yeah,
there's a lot of that.
It's been 4 months of no repairs, and I'm a little angrier.
You know who is taking personal stock? The 2016 Shecky Award winner for Fruit of the Year. Hey, fruits, hear me now. All you fruits, listen up and listen good. If you want to be the 2017 Fruit of the Year, you're going to have to take it from Red Seedless Grape, because it ain't giving it away. I had some Red Seedless ones, and they were, I mean, transcendent.
As good as a Rainier cherry?
I had some Rainiers, Ace.
Yeah.
They were very good.
Thank you.
But guess what? You know who's ready to play ball? You know what? Who doesn't need the warning I just issued? Watermelon. Oh, some watermelon.
Mid-season form.
Watermelon, yeah. Red Seedless Grapes.
Totally.
It's on, everybody.
Didn't White Nectarine have a nice showing last year or the year before?
Yeah.
Completely missing.
Yeah. We're talking about right now.
Embarrass themselves.
Okay. Let's not live life in the rearview mirror, Bald.
All right, the texture and the sweetness. Gary and Dylan, who a year ago I said, can we get into the back room of that restaurant and see if that chip is there? Are we done with that?
No, we are not.
Okay, why? Is there a place where you write things down?
I think I've coincidentally been to Republic in that time.
Probably four to six times.
I didn't know that was the restaurant.
You didn't help at all.
I didn't know that was the restaurant. No one told me.
Come on, it's 8.5 hours drive from here.
Yeah, Dylan
wait a
lives
second.
Next
no, it's
door.
Not. It's about 11 minutes from here.
Okay, that's one of my biggest, another one of my pet peeves is like, could you please just write it down and take it off my tray? Please, just write it down. I don't know what's wrong with everybody. All right, I'm in the mood. So, Mike, where were we last night?
At the Pont on Beverly Boulevard. Very chic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we sat outside, and Cousin Sal was trying to really... We're traveling light, so we're trying to get this bill padded. So Baby Doll pays. And
you're shorthanded.
We're shorthanded, and Sal doesn't drink. That was the other problem. So he's just trying to get this wine added up.
You're up against it, man.
Yes.
Yet Sal is the biggest pusher of alcohol. We've got this great video where he's trying to send bottles of rosé to every table around him. Baby's blocking him.
We were able to send over some wine somewhere, right?
Oh, yeah. Several bottles got sent through.
Several.
And then at some point, some guy showed up who worked for Telepictures for like 23 years and got a new job. And Sal's like, well, you're getting a bottle too. Like anyone who came by the table to say hi.
And Sal invented a new concept.
Oh, really?
Doggy bottles.
Oh, you take the bottles home.
You've got to get bottles like doggy food. We got to get our bottles to go.
Now, they're not licensed to sell you unopened bottles, but you could open the bottle and close it again. Isn't it great living in California in 2017? If you'd like to buy a bottle of wine, you simply open it and then close it again. And now it's all above the board. You can just go out to your car with it.
You've circumvented the law.
Makes perfect sense, right?
Of course, yeah. Totally logical.
Is this all we do with the tax system, by the way?
Stupid.
Okay.
And so, worsens the wine means you got to drink it in the next few, 3 days.
We'll chug in the parking lot. That's what the feds want. All right. So, Mike, do you have a little video of Cousin Sal?
We do indeed. We got Sal and Baby facing off. The sommelier is being given orders by Sal, and then Dixon is trying to change those orders.
Is Corolla not coming?
How is it?
It's too funky.
You don't want a funky 500.
Who wants funky 500?
I bet the
D.
Oh, really?
I want to be adventurous.
No, Bro's like two.
Who doesn't want the 250 bottle?
Let's do two more.
You want to do the LD one? Is really great.
Whatever you recommend. One of each.
What are they drinking over there? Right here. Rosé? Okay, get them another bottle.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Just come around with me to all the table. We can be like,
is that okay? Rosé is like $50.
You stick with me.
Sure.
Don't listen to him.
It does get confusing.
Give him $1.
I don't think she gets it.
Start with that.
That's smart, I think.
He's genuinely pissed. And yet he keeps coming back every year.
Well, he's agitated, right? And he kind of should be because they're spending tons and tons and tons of money.
People, Ace, over the years always say, like, I don't get Sal. You know, people from a distance sometimes. And he's got a great podcast on The Ringer. You should dig it up. I say he is the great – I mean, he's a hysterical human being. I'd put him really – not to fillet you, but you'd be in my top three or four human beings I've ever spent any time around for a wit. But he's got a really quick wit, and I think he's the best – he's the best coworker in the country. That's how I describe him because he makes it fun to be around.
Yes.
Unless you are his target that day. Yeah. Like, I've been hit with cold cuts by him in the face, you know. Like, then it's not my day. But as long as he's picking on somebody else, he makes the work environment as fun as anywhere you could possibly be. True or false?
No, I agree. I'm trying to think if I've ever – yeah, I'm trying to think of how that would translate if your work environment was roofer or Uber driver or something like that. Yeah, like he's in the back seat and he puts his hands over your eyes while you're driving. Like,
dumps a bucket of hot tar on you.
And look, when you're working for the Man Show, it is pretty perfect. And Jimmy Kimmel Live and going out with Baby to run up the tab. But yeah, I agree with that.
He's one of the great mixers and he makes it exciting every day.
We
no
just
how
dissected
Monday.
The bill. Here's the damage Sal was able to render. He got two bottles of Barolo at $250 each. He got another Barolo at $210. He got two bottles of Emildeo Pope something at $500 each.
You can tell August is a connoisseur.
Yeah. He capped it off. He got seven bottles of various types of Pappy, 12 years old,
that
totaled up to $485. So he did fairly good on the wine.
What about the brandy or the whiskey shots that were $66
up? Johnny Walker Blue or something?
That drove Dixon insane. Everybody got a shot, a $66 shot.
You know, they only hit us for two of those.
Wow, give you a discount.
Hometown discount, home cooking.
There's one item at 66 times two, and that's all it shows.
Damn it.
Yeah, so they caught when you were running a bill like that. We were the last ones out. We closed the place down.
Yeah,
it was nuts.
Baby Doll announced triumphantly he was smoking at the end. He didn't
care.
That
was a mistake.
Plus, we got every dessert.
That was a mistake.
Oh, we got every dessert.
Sal got every dessert ordered.
That's right.
Did everyone get surf and turf, or what was the main meal?
It wasn't tapas, but it was small portions that you just kept coming.
Okay. Yeah, we just
shared.
We just kept going.
Delicious.
Yeah. I'm never going to get full, and like halfway through, it's like, I can't eat anymore because you're just stuffing yourself.
I took home all the beef.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You did.
Yeah.
Baby got his super well, like he always does. He takes a beautiful piece of meat and has it charred. Then he doesn't eat it.
Who are these people?
He goes to the nicest steakhouses in the world, gets the best cut, orders it burnt, and it drives Jimmy insane.
He takes great pride in it. Well, I had to tell that story about the tri-tip that he's so proud of.
There must be a building analogy where you're taking something ostensibly, like if you took marble or some sort of marble and you did something to it, like painted it.
Spray painted it.
You know what I mean? Like you're ruining the essence of what makes it great.
Yeah,
Tyler Durden destroying something beautiful.
You have to understand that
Jared Leto's face.
It's not people talk about this taste and that taste. All right, shut your mic, please. This. By the way, when your name is Mike Dawson, I'll shut your mic. It sort of implies you. But here's what I'm saying. People talk about this guy's taste, that guy's taste. It's not this guy's taste and that guy's taste. It's yummy phase, kids versus adults when you move it on. kids, for the most part, like beef that's well better done. They don't want pink and weird and gushy and all that
metallic
kind of stuff.
Yep.
They want, you know, baby doll doesn't drink, you know, scotch, neat, or martini. He has Mount Gay rum and, like, cola, you know? So it's like every
everything
is a thing that's a yummy. It's the yummy phase. Yep.
That's why we call him baby.
I've been... But it's like his whole life is that way. When look, when he's driving and he has some wrappers in his lap, he throws it out the window. Like what a 9-year-old would do. Mm. It just Bean from Kevin and Bean is that dude, and so is Kevin. Like a million years ago, me and Jimmy and everyone went out to Seattle for the Final Four, and you know the best part about traveling is going and partaking in the local fair.
Well, team building
and. I don't care about that part, but we're hungry. But, you know, this, the people that want to go find the closest Arby's or McDonald's to the Space Needle, that drives me insane. And so you're in Seattle, you get the craft beers and stuff. So, of course, Jimmy and I are having the craft beers. And, you know, Bean's asking if they have Fanta, like they have grape soda, or like orange soda. Like you're going to Seattle. You're drinking soda. You know, like grape soda. Like what is that? What does Sonny want? You know what I mean? It's being a kid, and then you never transition from that phase.
It's confirmation. You know what? A lot of billionaire guys, like not just Trump, who by the way does eat his steaks well done.
That's how he likes them.
A lot of those guys, it's the Samson effect. I think it's in combo with the yummy phase and the Samson effect, which is to say that those guys, they have the same hairdo. Like Trump, to a ridiculous degree at this point, still has that exact same hairdo. Why don't you cut it? Deep down, they fear if they cut it, somehow it's going to remove their powers.
I think
there are a lot of billionaires who suit that.
I think it's more the Peter Pan effect, where they are going to remain a child.
That's also true, right?
Yeah, so that's just, and also I think there's a correlation between like liking comic books and other things of that nature versus cigar, scotch, and pussy, like the acquired.
The big three.
The big three, the acquired taste.
We were in New Orleans for the Super Bowl many moons ago, and I remember it was me, Sal, and Baby Doll, and it was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and we went there to eat oysters and all the NOLA fare, and Baby Doll had to have eggs, eggs, and started shouting at the poor waitress, "If we can't have any effing eggs, we're walking. We're out of here." We're not out of here, Baby Doll. We've ordered.
Baby is on like on a stricter diet. He doesn't eat like Mexican. He doesn't eat Indian. He doesn't eat Chinese.
But how many cigarettes does he go through?
He eats about 24 of those a day.
Eats 24 cigarettes.
You're picturing a child now. Yeah, you go out to eat with him. Gary's got to find the picture
it's Italian
of his cigarette packet.
Or it's American. That's all he does.
Sugar packets. You go out to eat breakfast with him. God. It is white toast, extra butter, bacon, eggs, sunny side up, 3,000 sugar and cream packets. It's called like we like coffee because we like the taste of coffee. He likes sugar. He likes melted. Melted coffee ice cream. Like if Sonny were to drink coffee, this is how Sonny would drink coffee. Yeah.
He's eating in a different era. He's like eating from the 50s.
He's trapped in the 50s.
Yeah.
He's
never puts on an ounce either, which is awesome.
No. Speaking of the well-done steak, so a good friend of mine, former guest of the show, Rich DeMiro, likes the steaks well done. Tech guy, Rich DeMiro, he likes the steaks well done. And I always kind of give him a hard time about it, but that's how he likes the steaks. Well, you mentioned the sweet drinks for Baby Doll. Something snapped into focus. I remember going to Rich's house one time. Rich's house, and he offered me a drink. He's like, "Oh, come over to the bar, have a drink." Front and center, cake batter vodka.
Rich, what is this? And we trust him to tell us what Android to buy.
Right, he's very smart when it comes to tech stuff.
Oh,
yep.
Rich.
We got another competition. Dumb man, Schwarza. I have this. I have a theory that those guys are trapped, and if you look, and it permeates all forms of
and it
life.
Yeah,
that same guy who wants a well cooked steak also wants flavored vodka and that kind of stuff.
Weird.
Yeah, that's a weird but sort of consistent because again, just what would Sonny, if you told Sonny, "Yeah, you have to drink vodka," he'd go with the cotton candy vodka. He'd go with the steak.
Sure.
cook like
easiest,
that.
Easiest, your gateway vodka. You know, yeah. The easiest to get down first.
There's another yardstick to measure these guys, which is probably overindulging in ketchup. Oh. I wonder if they're putting ketchup on too much.
Oh, I'm going to his house for a barbecue in a week. I'll report back.
Yeah. Those guys also typically wear around. Shorts way too often for grown men.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit too much with the short business. Yeah. Ketchup's the worst. Ketchup, I can't think of a food that there is a bigger drop off from the moment you're eating it and enjoying it to 4 minutes later after you're done eating and you get a whiff of ketchup. It's nauseating. It's one of the most disgusting smells you'll ever. If you're done with your food and you see a plate, ugh, repellent.
Yeah. I don't like when people use too much of it and then you have to try to fish the swimmers out of there and see if you can get the ratio right again. Yes.
We were at the Dodger Royals game last weekend. I went with my family and my dad said, go get me a couple, because they have those new Dodger dogs with the casing. So we got him some of those.
Good.
And I just said, you know, I'm going to get him. What do you want? Ketchup, mustard on your hot dog? And he lit into me.
Good.
For asking?
In
you
public.
Don't ask an adult male.
I mean, if I would have been smacked across the face, I wouldn't have been surprised. He was outraged that I would ask him. He said, mustard, what are you talking about?
Don't bury the lead. Did you try the new Dodger dog and how was it?
He did. I don't need a hot dog.
Nope. Nobody over 9.5 should have ketchup
Boo!
On their hot dog. Oh, no.
What are we live in a dictatorship
yes,
now?
My world.
We live in a free society. I'll put on my wiener whatever I choose, sir. Thank you.
All right.
And good evening.
As long as it's not ketchup.
It's ketchup, as a matter of fact. Some dark mustard and some onions, if you please. Uh-huh. And if you don't like it, you don't. I didn't ask for your opinion to begin with, but I got a little something for you.
Uh-oh.
You're a jerk! You don't talk about my wiener. My wiener is my business.
I get the one. You want the sweet sensation.
Fine.
That should be taken care of with a little bit of relish.
There you go.
Thank you very much. All right, hold on. I got a call here. Our guest is here. This is one I want to talk to. I don't know why. Rick, 34, Stockton.
Hey, Adam.
What's going on?
Hey, not much, man. Listen, I was watching a documentary, L.A. Burning, last night, looking back on the L.A. riots the last 25 years. While I was watching, I was wondering, man, where were you during the riots?
I was with a Korean on top of a liquor store with my hat turned backwards.
Safest place to be.
Yelling, who's next, as loud as I could. And if you want some, come get some.
That's a great question.
I was living in L.A. I remember the curfew. I was working, not like downtown-y, but I don't know, like Culver City-y, and it was for the first time ever, as a guy, I was just driving a pickup truck around and having this weird sort of paranoia getting stuck in. I think everyone has this paranoia of getting trapped in between a couple of cars, and then the mob is coming from them, and they can't kind of break free. I do remember, like, taking my hammer or crowbar, like some of my tools or something, and sliding it under the bench seat of my Nissan pickup truck, like thinking if the mob tries to pull me out of the truck. But I think I was living in Santa Monica in an apartment at the time, which was not a hotbed of activity. It was getting from where I was working back to Santa Monica. And I remember the curfews and all that.
Was the news, what was the local news like, hey, if you're in these areas, get out of there and go to this part of the city if you want to avoid any trouble?
I remember reports of them saying there was a general curfew. I remember talks about National Guard. I remember some reports of groups like going to Beverly Hills and, you know, sort of bringing the fight to Beverly Hills, not just, you know, burning down Compton and South Central. There was a little bit of that, which I think probably freaked people out that the people were mobile.
I don't think the LAPD tolerated anyone going that far west.
I don't know. Gary's got to look for it now. There was some story. I don't know if there were stories or there was, you know, three guys went down and threw a brick off of a cannon or something like that. But there was like little, but they were not going to just stand down. The LAPD just stood down and let everyone burn and, you know, everything burn and people get pulled out of trucks and stuff. It's like, they're really like, the LAPD they need a dimmer switch, but they have a toggle switch. It's either just beat the mother three by the side of the road on or Reginald Denny's getting pulled out of a truck. Stand there, just back it off.
Well, of
just
course,
back it, let it burn itself out.
What could LAPD do? They were, you know, directly or otherwise, the cause of this. And so if they were to go out and engage the people that are rioting against them, That's wow! What a crazy thing.
I
that
just
must
think, like, if you're Reginald Denny getting pulled out of your gravel truck, you got to go. Where's the popo? Yeah, right in the middle of the intersection. The lights.
I can see the helicopter
above.
Right above me.
Right. Where?
He's just
the
taking
guy?
Video.
Who's he talking to? All right. That'll answer that, and then talk to Adam, 38, Florida. What's going on, Adam?
Good to talk to everybody. First of all, I wanted to tell you something from yesterday's show. A friend of my dad's owns a Toyota dealership, and they're told by the corporate office that moving to Texas is going to save them 10%.
Well, that's all they need to know to move.
So bottom line driven public company.
But then the question is, how old will Sonny and Natalia have to be before you decide that you might part ways with Olga?
Oh, no, Olga is smart. Olga's reinventing herself.
Oh.
She's asking me what time I'm coming home tonight so she can have dinner.
Your slippers ready.
Waiting. Yeah, it's going to take a turn for the sexual very shortly. By my clock, between 8 and 14 months.
Oh, wow.
She very is soon. Transitioning nicely into cleaning up stuff, cooking me food, making me big batches of egg salad on Mondays that I eat all throughout the week, and my green mulch. Like, she's no dummy. She's making little proclamations like she likes to work, you know, just proclamations like that, which I love.
She likes being employed, Mr. C.
Yep.
I heard she's on her way to Republic as we speak.
Looking for that chip.
Which room are you in?
So, Adam?
Yes.
Honestly, I don't know, because she's stepping up her game. And listen, I love it. I've never had that in my life.
Make yourself indispensable.
No,
it's an important thing in life.
Oh my God, everybody. There's two things. One is, as I famously yelled at Daniel Kellison when he was running Jimmy's show, talk show, and when he was yelling at me about something, I fired back, don't come back tomorrow and see if anyone notices. And if you can honestly say, I will not be there, and the show will go on. And it's not like, well, we'll get some temporary help, or it's belt tightening time, or everyone's going to have to pitch in. Like, but you just don't show up and it goes on. That's not good.
Hmm?
Not good at all. Although Olga did the ultimate thing that drives me nuts is a guy who's never been paid throughout my blue collar work history for any day I've ever missed of work. Blue collar work is you show up and you work. And if you don't show up, then you don't get paid. Or if you have to do a half day to go to the dentist on a Friday, then you get paid for 4.5 days. Just, you're not there, you don't get paid. We would always work a half day going into Christmas, take Christmas off, and then come back and work the next day because no one could afford missing a day of work and the pay after Christmas. Now, people are on salary, and I get it, but Olga did this one to me. 4th of July last week was on a Tuesday. So she had off Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and then on Wednesday, I said, where's Olga? And Lynette said, she's sick.
Ooh.
And I thought, I know she's sick, but...
Diabolical.
Why not be sick on Monday?
Too much patriotism.
That's right. She had that red, white, and blue flu.
Yeah, she did. All right. Let me tell you about 23andMe, genetic service that provides reports about where your DNA comes from. Explore what percentage of your DNA comes from Italy, Finland, East Asia, Africa, wherever.
They should send us a handful of kits.
I was about to do this. My doctor told me to do it.
We should do it. Oh. Do the results on the
It's FDA
week.
Approved. Let's do it.
Yeah, your doctor wants to know what you're at risk at,
yes,
or what your heritage
yes,
is and all that.
This.
Yeah, you could be Ashkenazi or something.
God, God forbid.
Now, through August 3rd, 23andMe.com is where you go, 23andMe.com. They're going to choose one person a day for 23 days to travel to countries based on their DNA. Order your DNA kit for a chance to win this trip and explore your connection to the world, valued at up to $20,000. Damn. 5 nights, round-trip airfare for the winner and a guest, plus spending money. Not too shabby. So to enter, visit 23andMe.com. That is the number, 23andMe.com. 23andMe, Dawson.
Nope. No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older. Ends August 3rd. Must complete the 23andMe service. Visit 23andMe.com/rules for free entry.
23 Native American winners.
Not going
send
anywhere.
Send you to Iowa.
All right. Matt Schrader, interesting filmmaker. So he made a documentary called Score, which is very interesting. It's about how powerful and important the score is.
Do you watch it?
On movies, yeah.
It's excellent.
So good.
Excellent. Excellent. And you wouldn't, in a weird way, you go, wow, this is so strangely compelling. On the other hand, it has to be because it's about the thing in movies that make it so compelling. Strangely compelling.
Yep. Yep.
Dave, you have a list of movie scores that you'd like to argue for, and Brian as well?
Yes, let's kibitz about them. I think the gold standard, most people would say, now I know that the upcoming guest disagrees with this, but in my book, it begins and ends, and not just because I'm a Star Wars nerd. It is the Star Wars. I mean, the John Williams did Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to hear a little of that? There we go. We all know what it sounds like.
Yes.
There it is. Turn that down. Let me do it a cappella. No, I can't beat that. And you remember the Imperial March and everything else. That's Raiders of the Lost Ark is.
You're going to like this documentary Score because they spent a lot of time on John Williams. Yeah. He's the best living.
Right. Gold standard.
Well, mm-hmm. I think people say Hans Zimmer. This is great, and then Jaws as well, right?
Yep.
All one man.
Jurassic
one man
Park, Schindler's List.
Yeah.
You know what I'm surprised didn't make the list?
What's that?
Because we've had a huge controversy on the morning show a few times about what is the best John Williams song of these three, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Star Wars, or Superman.
Oh, come on. Star Wars.
I say Raiders.
Really?
All day.
Superman's got that nice
pretty good.
Superman's pretty great.
Nice build.
One guy did this.
You guys are sleeping on Jurassic Park.
No, I love Jurassic Park, but in terms of adventure,
yeah,
that's more sweet.
Da, na, 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 na,
now, who does this, Dave?
John Williams, right?
Well, let's let him do it.
Da, na,
I love that. So good.
Better get right. back to Star Wars. There's a character named Han Solo. He has a weapon on his right hip. Well, I mean, listen, you're the one who's shooting your mouth off. Let me shoot a little something off. It's called the Han Solo Edition Blaster. You're a jerk! What are you talking? I'm trying to do something
that
here.
Stings.
Next up, here's an interesting one from the 80s. Remember Vangelis? Remember Chariots of Fire and
yes.
And Blade Runner?
Sure.
This is the most underrated scorer. Is that
what
you call
him? What's the guy's name?
Composer. Vangelis. Just one word, like Sting. Remember this music?
Oh,
it's both.
He's in a lot of.
Was Ryan Cynthia. Reynolds in that?
Did he do Blade Runner?
This is Blade Runner.
Oh, this
right
is
here.
Blade Runner. Sorry.
Blade Runner and Chariots of Fire.
Yeah.
And you hear this music for like about a 6-year window in a lot of movies. And it's both just quintessentially 80s, but also has this weird timeless quality mm-hmm. to it, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
This could be in a lot of movies today.
It works in Chariots of Fire, which is obviously a movie set in the 1920s. And this is a future movie, and the music... It's something about... I don't know what it is. Is it an organ? What's he doing that on, Dawson?
Synth?
Definitely a synthesizer.
When are we going to get to Jerry Reed and Eastbound and Down, man? The ultimate. I mean, the
soundtrack.
Best. He told a story.
I like the movie ones, Ace. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I like the actual popular musicians who then score entire movies. Perhaps most famous is Simon and Garfunkel with The Graduate.
Sure.
All right. Okay.
They do the whole movie.
Talks about that in the doc, too. It's a real turning point for popular music as opposed to orchestral.
I didn't even know they scored this whole movie. I just knew they used their stuff, but I didn't know they specifically said, we're going to score this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Same thing with Cat Stevens and Harold and Maude.
Yep.
He said, if you like the soundtrack so much, go see the movie.
How crazy. There's also a movie that is both...
So those songs were written for the movie.
It sounds like it because you couldn't. You
Simon
couldn't.
Simon Garfunkel's were yes.
Oh, okay.
Right. Because they're specifically
with Cat Stevens.
Robinson.
The only way
talk about Mrs. Robinson.
Or Cat Stevens.
No. The only way to get it was to go see the movie. Cat Stevens said that specifically.
Okay.
So they must have been.
Another one that was I love the movie and some of it because you laugh at it, but some of it is actually pretty good. Queen scores all of Flash Gordon.
Ooh,
that's right.
Don't
Flash.
That's right. Thank you. Yeah.
How did I not know that?
You didn't know this one?
I didn't know that.
He'll save every one of us!
Who's it Flash about? Gordon, quarterback, New York Jets. You mentioned the city of Los Angeles, Ace. This movie must have meant something to you in the mid-80s. To Live and Die in L.A., scored entirely by Wang Chung.
What?
Wow.
Not talk about an 80s soundtrack.
You never saw Wang Chung? No. You never saw To Live and Die in L.A.?
No, never did.
It's good. I think you'd like it. It's all about counterfeiting. And Willem Dafoe is at his creepiest. He's the bad guy in it.
Not
it's saying, a great movie.
Not saying something.
Not nice for
have you
too.
Seen it, Bald?
No, I've not.
Wow, it's a great movie that I wouldn't want to give anything away, but it you would be legitimately surprised by it. It's very 80s-ish, but also a good crime picture.
And that's so ironic that, Adam, you've never seen this, but you love Wang Chung.
Nobody loves Wang. Oh. No, wait a minute.
And then
they wrote a song about themselves. Yeah, it never works out.
I don't think we have it, but Ace, a movie you, me, and the great Kevin Hench enjoyed on a matinee first weekend many years ago, Kill Bill, we went to see. RZA, from Wu-Tang, scored this picture. Now, there's a lot of other movies, like all Quentin Tarantino movies, other songs in it, but this is original music. It sounds like something out of a 1965 action movie or something.
Never even thought about the score on this movie.
Great.
All right, so what is the bet to settle?
I don't know. Bald Brian.
There's no bet to settle.
Because he didn't want any of it. He said, I can handle Hans Zimmer. And I said, well, I'm going John Williams. And then he said, well, I mean, John Williams is, in fact, the best. So I don't know if I really am equipped to answer that question. Mm-hmm. Bald Brian.
This is a poorly conceived bit. But we walked in. I was handed a debate. But I will say, I will throw out a few that Hans Zimmer is probably the best modern composer. John Williams is still working, of course. Yeah. But Hans Zimmer may have taken the mantle and run with it. Listeners of this show will know that this pops up a lot in our made-up movies. This is From The Rock. And this pops up a lot in trailers, especially in the late 90s. They inserted this as like the bed music in a lot of trailers for other movies.
Oh, really? Yes. So From The Rock.
So Bruckheimer-y.
The movie still holds the record for the phrase "stand down." He's 128 times
stand down.
Screams. No one whispers "stand down." They scream "stand down."
If I'm wrong, God bless us all. God help us all. Bruckheimer. I don't think that phrase isn't used 17 times per picture.
Hans Zimmer does a great job of incorporating sort of a rock element into his music. This is the one from Pirates of the Caribbean, which is really fantastic. Maybe it doesn't hold up as like a classic score, but
this feels like you're on the ocean.
This is great. This is great. You know what? You're right about that. That's a good description of it, Gene. You feel like you're riding high on the sea.
And maybe my favorite Hans Zimmer score, one that comes up all the time in made-up movies because it's just so great, is from Black Hawk Down.
Ooh.
It's got the great Mogadishu kind of, you know, you feel like you're in the Moog.
Underrated film, we decided.
I love that movie. I own that movie.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with Black Hawk Down.
You're going into the thick of it right now. Guns drawn.
A Mad Max vibe.
God, that was one of those movies that made me want to take a shower afterward. Like so much dust and
very
dirt
dirty,
blood
very
and,
sweaty.
Yes. Yeah. Just want to take the Lipton plunge. Yes.
I have a special, not a blue ribbon, but one that I think even if you don't like the movie or you think it's a kid's movie or it's stupid, this song, the theme from Back to the Future, makes you feel like you are about to see a movie. Like you're in the theater, you got your popcorn. Do you have that?
Wah, 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 wah.
Not a...
Got to get back
not
in
that
time.
One.
The Power of Love. Oh, man, this is good, too.
This still gives me goosebumps. Adventure is nigh.
Another great thing they talked about in the doc was the use of musical motifs, and this one comes up throughout Back to the Future.
In a sad way, in a forlorn way.
Yeah, there's something, it's one of these things, maybe it's the equivalent to wanting your steak extra rare, but a society that cranks out these kinds of overtures and symphonies and stuff like that is always more advanced.
Feels a little bit more elevated.
You've landed, you've arrived as a culture, as a society, when you're cranking this stuff out.
Absolutely.
That's epic. Right.
Grandeur. But also there's range, too, you know, as we talk about. And, you know, little acoustic Simon and Garfunkel, mm-hmm. also iconic. I think also it's funny, like, have you ever seen Buffalo 66? A great underrated yes. picture. There are scenes in that when he
Bill
gets
Murray?
Out of jail.
That's where the Buffalo roam. Oh, yeah, this is Vincent Gallo.
This is Vincent Gallo.
Yeah, it's a really good picture. It's interesting and different than most of what you'll
Christina
see.
Ricci.
But when he gets out of the joint early on and takes the bus to Buffalo, it's not there's no music underneath, and you just hear the road, the dun 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 of the bus.
It's got a rhythm of its own.
Riding on the freeway, and it's striking because you're so accustomed. It jumps out at you like, oh, they have no music. You don't realize how much you depend on the music for your emotions until you see this. But it's also great.
What was by the way, whoever's doing Tarantino stuff is pretty amazing too.
Yep.
They do say Hateful Eight and all that kind of stuff. It's amazing.
And that's who it is. It's RZA.
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah.
No, not at the beginning. He's using the spaghetti western guy at the beginning when the carriage and the horses are going through the snow and they're playing the big
stuff.
Oh,
in the Hateful Eight. I'm sorry.
Yes. But amazing stuff. And then I'm trying to think of the movies that are silent all throughout. And somebody pointed it out to me, and I was like, oh, there wasn't any score, was there? I'm trying to think.
I think Nebraska may have had very little score. Yeah. A movie like a sort of a bleaker movie like that.
Yeah, no, there's a modern movie that did it, and I didn't even know it.
Oh, really?
And I got to think of, I don't know, maybe Garrett can look it up.
Sorry, I was looking up The Hateful Eight. I didn't catch that.
Movies, popular movies, sort of modern, that had no soundtrack. There are no music.
No Country for Old Men?
Oh, yeah, it was No Country. It was that. It was No Country
for
Old Men.
Has no music in it, huh?
Yeah, now it's weird. You don't know it, but it's like in a weird way, as much as it can offer is as much as it can offer with its absence as well. Huh. It's just left you alone with the feelings. Yeah.
Another one apparently is Castaway, and the birds didn't have any music either.
That's right. Not entirely, but there's no music while he's stranded.
Right.
Right, but
and then as soon as he gets on that his little thing that he makes to get off of there, that's when he looks back to the island, the music kicks back
in.
Right,
no score.
Gary says some music in No Country, but very, very little. All right, but anyway, love that movie. Steven, 30, Atlanta. Steven?
Hey, Adam, it's an honor. Long time.
What's going on? Thanks.
Yeah, so I just was thinking, I've never heard you talk about your high school graduation ceremony and it being graduating season and whatnot. You know, I just imagine like a great keynote speaker in the valley or, you know.
Yeah. All I remember was it was at the high school. They set up smaller bleachers facing the bigger football bleachers on the home field side. So we just, the bleachers that go four high or whatever went up to all the parents. I don't think my family, I'm trying to think if anyone showed up. My dad and my mom.
No way. Really?
Well, his dad was walking by coincidentally.
They ran a ruse. They had this great ruse, which is when they separated, they couldn't see each other. They couldn't tolerate seeing each other. So if they didn't want to go to something.
The passion burned too bright, you're saying.
Yeah. They just go, I figured your mom was going to be there, so I didn't want to be there.
That's
and
diabolical.
Then their mom would say, I figured your dad was going to be there, so I wasn't going to show up.
That's
and that way
terrible.
They could both stay home. They're awesome folks. So I remember them not being there. I remember, but not caring. At that point, it's like 18, like these losers. I got to get out of here and start my whirlwind life of cleaning carpets and digging ditches. I do remember not getting my diploma because I owed the book room 1995 for We the People. And I was like, I don't have that kind of money. I don't need the diploma to clean carpets or dig ditches. I've never showed the diploma. I never got the diploma. I've podcasting, comedy, you know, open mics, Groundlings, Acme, digging ditches, cleaning carpets. Like there's never any cause for diploma. And, but I do, the one thing I remember is I sat in the first row at the bottom, just up against all the parents that filled the bleachers, and Ray took a piss. And he took a piss in front of everybody.
Ray?
But he had his gown around his knees, and he had to take a piss, and or he just wanted to take a piss. And at a certain point, he just said, "I'm going to take a piss." I was like, "Don't you piss on me," because, you know, there's people around, because he would pee on people. And he got his dick out, and he just sort of spread his knees. And I guess the gown went far enough over his knees where he could kind of just get his dick out and just pee onto the field, just pee onto the dirt in front of him. But it was first row. I guess you almost need the first row, but there's a wall of parents in front of us and faculty.
Brazen.
For that
went out
matter.
On top.
He went out. Yeah, and made a statement.
And he did get a diploma that day.
He did get a diploma that day. Wow. That was funny. Wasn't his. He shook down some Jewish kid. Played the breathing game with him. Thanks, Stephen. I don't remember anyone speaking, and I have no idea. I was staring down the barrel. If you guys... any history, like when you hear these guys, when we had the recession in like 08, and they're saying the worst recession since 1983, the worst recession since 82, 83, that's the worst since. That's when I graduated high school, 82. And the economy and the job markets were so bad that the able-bodied kid with, you know, technically a high school diploma who was hardworking and honest and legal, spoke English, I walked into 1,000... you know, supermarkets and liquor stores said, "Can I get a job stocking shelves?" And they're like, "No, you cannot. We're not hiring anybody." And that was it. I'd just go back to the garage. Like, there wasn't any jobs.
I remember prior to that, like 1979, 1980, surely you remember this, Ace. Bald and Gene are too young, probably. But do you remember sitting in long lines to get gas?
Oh, yeah.
That was crazy. In hindsight, how weird is that? You would wait an hour to get to fill your car
with
gas.
That was early, like 74, 73.
It was that long ago?
Yeah, it was OPEC embargo stuff, odd, even numbering on the license plate.
I promise this ties in. When was the jerk made?
79.
Okay, because I remember.
78, 79.
Carl Reiner was speaking and said they all had to carpool during that time because of that.
Oh, well, I'm trying to go back, and I remember the first one was like 72, 73, or 73, 74. That was the OPEC embargo, whatever. Maybe there was I know gas got expensive again. Check that out.
The Jerk, as Bald Brian calls it, a forgettable movie.
I can read a little more here.
Mediocre performer.
I call it the me biopic.
Here it is.
I can read a little more here, but the first things that pop up are 73 oil crisis and 79 energy crisis.
Oh, okay. Well, they were both. All right. Last one. Carlos Palmdale.
Ace.
Hey, man.
Pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, man.
First of all, let me tell you, my commute is Palmdale to Fullerton, so you literally keep me sane and alive, and I can't thank you enough for that.
Thank you, Carlos.
Just got a quick rich man, poor man.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hear it.
Living in the hills.
Meaning nice spread over looking over Sunset Strip versus bivouacking up there with all the crazy homeless people. Or Appalachia.
Versus favelas in Brazil and places, Haiti and places like that.
We went to...
True. There isn't any middle... There's as out here, there's no such thing as like sort of middle class in the hills.
No.
In addition to that, I think we may have touched on this at this show, but Gary and I were talking about this the other day. Seeing your house from the freeway.
Mm-hmm. Rich man, poor man.
Yeah,
because it's the apartment that's right up against the side of it versus the one that's up under the Hollywood sign. Yeah, I like that. I do like seeing the ones right up against the apartments. Go, what are you doing here? Yes.
We went to Tijuana 2 years ago to help at an orphanage, and you had to get up these crazy hills to get there, and all the beautiful homes were right down on the water. And they said all the poor people who don't have cars are stuck up there. If a bus doesn't come, it doesn't come. So that's really interesting. I hadn't known that before that. So living in the hills.
What'd you do at the orphanage?
We entertained the kids and brought them stuff and toys and washing machines and dryers.
Entertained them? What'd you do? Them. Songs? What'd
you
do?
We played with them. We had
the baby. It's a grand old flag. Hey, buddy. Hey, Pablo, grab a knee. Kick off those hirachis and get comfortable. Anyone? Hey, we got the 2-for-1 chiclets during happy hour. All right.
Just like that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Carlos. Oops. Wait a minute. Carlos?
Yeah.
Good. Thanks for listening. I like the people that listen during their commute.
Yeah. Like I told you, you're my company 5 days a week, so definitely appreciate it.
Thank you.
Quick question,
yes.
Adam. I'm a big music fan. What's your favorite one-hit wonder of the 80s? Do you have one, like a new wave one-hit wonder?
Oh, I got to say Switchin' to Glide by the Kings. Oh. because it is two hits in one. It is switching the glass.
Is it?
Yeah. But this is the second part. Song rocks, man. Oh, this is the live version. It's always the live version. All right, hold on. I'll let you find it. I'll tell you about LifeLock, and then we'll enjoy my favorite 80s one-hit wonder song. Not a novelty song, either. A great rock song that, as far as I can tell, never gets played because it's way too long, and I don't think the Kings ever had another hit. FBI says over 1 billion lost in internet scams in 2015 alone. Someone's identity stolen every 2 seconds in ways you may not be able to detect. If you're only monitoring your credit, thieves could sell your information on the dark web or get an online payday loan in your name. Don't let that happen. Let's go with LifeLock. They detect a wide range of identity threats. If there's a problem, the U.S.-based identity restoration specialist will work to fix it. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock is the best. I have it. Lynette has it. The kids have it. You're online shopping. It's 2017. Protect yourself. It's LifeLock. Dawson.
Act now. Get the added protection of Norton Security free for the first year when you bundle Norton and LifeLock memberships. Plus, for a limited time, you'll also get a special 15% discount on your first year of your LifeLock membership. Call 1-800-LifeLock or go to LifeLock.com and use promo code Adam15. That's Adam15 to save 15% today. Terms apply.
All right. Do we have the Kings?
Beat goes on.
Yeah, that's the first half of the song. And it was back when K-Rock would play this song. Probably 82, 84? I'm early 80s. I remember that. I think the Kings may have been Canadian. And I think this is their... pretty sure this is their only hit. Gary will look it up.
I don't...
1980, Gary.
I do not know this song. I don't know how that's possible. It must have been the year before my bar mitzvah circuit. When in Pittsburgh, you went on the bar mitzvah circuit for an entire year.
They're from Ontario, Canada. And the thing is, these guys could have been very unique to SoCal and K-Rock. Hmm. See, everyone else would have been listening to, like, Meatloaf. We didn't hear Meatloaf out here, but we heard all, you know, Oingo Boingo and the Bus Boys and stuff like that that wasn't being played. Then when you talk to your friends who are from out of town, they haven't heard of X. There's like an L.A. K-Rock thing. And so everyone else listened to like REO Speedwagon and stuff.
Area bands used to be much bigger of a thing than they are today. Like, I remember thinking, growing up in the Bay Area, thinking Tower Power was one of the biggest bands in the world because they played them all the time up there.
And Ace just inadvertently or otherwise just dropped X.
X.
X well, was an actual great band.
They're playing at Pershing Square this
X was
summer.
A local band. This band's from Ontario that only K-Rock would play. Like, K-Rock would just play certain groups that other stations would never play. This song would be too weird for a rock station to play. Song sound familiar, anyone?
No.
No, I like it.
I've heard to play it before.
It sounds like it would be in a Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
That is true.
Yeah.
I've played this on the radio before in Santa Barbara.
Oh, really? Whole song?
Yeah.
All right.
That, by the way, speaking of soundtracks, I'm sure the guest can tell you guys about that. But as I understand it, that is completely concocted by, assuming you guys have seen the Guardians of the Galaxy, the director just thought it'd be a great idea if he's obsessed with early 80s music. That whole part of his of the lead character's personality that is just the director said, wouldn't that be an interesting twist for him?
Well, Tarantino used it to great effect in Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah. And in Pulp Fiction.
All right, we're going to get ready to shift gears. Got to turn it up. So this is the first half of the song.
To this chart, Gary?
It's done some. Gary will figure it out. It's like a foreplay, but we have to wait until it kicks. And then maybe you guys will know the part where it kicks. I don't know.
That did sound recognizable when Ball played that earlier. She's got Betty Davis eyes. That was a good one-hit wonder. 1981. 82.
Here it is. Turn up. Oh.
Yeah.
part of the song.
Yeah. It's a great song.
I don't remember the beat goes on.
It has a bit of a sweet Fox on the Run
like
vibe.
Sweet. That's right. Gary says it charted.
No, it doesn't.
I'm turning it up, I'm turning it down.
Internationally, I guess, right? Doesn't appear it's charted. Oh, okay.
You talk in the 70s about all the witchy and evil women. Mm-hmm. It seems like in the 80s, people were really focused on celebrating the weekend.
it got popular in the local Chicago area. All right, turn it up. We're gone. Dozen shouldn't be that close. I just look down and turn dozen into does. This is a rock song. I'd like to commend myself on a great answer. This is a one-hit wonder that did two songs. All right. Let's bring it down. Dave Damashek, man. The Dave Damashek Football Program. Check out that podcast. New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday on iTunes.
Yeah,
and
subscribe, everybody. Let's do it. We don't just talk about football. We talk about the game of life, which is arguably even more important than the game of football.
NFL.com/DDFP. You can go
Thanks,
there.
Thanks, Ace,
well.
And everybody. The people on social media hit me up and say such nice things with but thanks to my visits in here with you, good.
They're in love with you, Sheck. All right. Matt Schrader made a little movie called Score. We all loved it. He'll be in studio next.
You're invited to a special town hall meeting. Corolla Drinks presents the Reasonable Doubt Town Hall with Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla. Admission is $30 and includes two free drinks. Your ticket will also include a free download of Mistrial by Mark Garagus and Pat Harris and narrated by Mike Dawson. Don't wait. Tickets are going fast. The Reasonable Doubt Town Hall, Thursday, July 20th, 7 p.m. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com.
Have you heard Spike's Car Radio? It's comedian, actor, writer Spike Ferriston sitting on the porch in Malibu talking with some cool people about cool cars and life in general.
My first guest is Jerry Seinfeld. He's right here. He was all right. Don't try to hug him.
Chris Hardwick.
I could feel everything on the road. I mean, it was right. Basically like, it was like unprotected sex for driving.
Jeremy Piven.
I think you and Jerry are spiritually tied to cars, and I respect it and I love it, but I don't quite get it yet, but I want to get it.
Download new episodes of Spike's Car Radio every Wednesday on the Podcast One app, or save time and subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or at podcastone.com.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
So, Ace Man, the other day I was about to take a prescription pill. I'm about to pop it in my mouth. I drop it. This is at work. And it drops into a mop bucket. The mop bucket was dry. There was no liquid in it. But it lands right in the middle. All gross and nasty stuff on the sides. I thought about you. Picked it up. I still went for it, man. And by the way, I work for a veterinarian. So, nasty stuff being picked up there. Thanks for the motivation, bro.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Yeah, man. You don't want that herpes flare up. You better take that medication. Matt Schrader here. Documentary's called Score. It's in select theaters now. And what you can do is you can go to score-movie.com to find out where it is or how you can get it or when it's coming to a city near you. Good to see you, Matt.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Congratulations on the movie. We all really enjoyed it.
That's so great to hear. It's been like kind of a crazy ride for us the last couple of years, and it's fun that people are seeing it and they don't hate it, which is always a good thing. That's the paranoia that comes in. I mean, you've made movies, so you know you're like trying to test it with people you know first and make sure that you got something that you think is going to flow. But there was a lot of that. There was really a lot of paranoia.
There's always this process, or there's the opportunity in almost any creative endeavor, but certainly making a movie where you, I always say it's like a stew and you put in all your favorite ingredients and all your favorite seasonings and everything's in that pot. And then it comes to that point where you just take that ladle and you You take a little sip, and there's you can pull your head back and go, eh.
Need like, something.
It's okay.
Need salt.
It's okay. Like, it's just, oh, no, right. I wish it needed salt, because you just, salt means go get salt. This is.
Not quite sure what happened.
We're done.
And the fear
we're
is done, like when and there you start is no, putting,
adding salt is easy. Yeah, I wish you could add
it's
it.
It's when you have too many ingredients a lot of times right. that it's good. Like, oh, there's no saving this.
It's the notes yeah. you don't
can't take
play.
That flavor out of there mm-hmm. now.
Yeah, so there's that. There's sort of that, and it's a two-year process to make the stew, so there's a little bit of that, but that did not happen in this case, Matt.
Thank you.
Delectable, I might say. How did you get, so this is this your first documentary?
Yeah, I mean, I dabbled in this a little bit because I come from the news world, the TV news world, and so I had been a producer, but it's a very different thing that I was doing. I was doing investigative producing and you know, some consumer news and like stuff that really is meant to educate you when you're watching something, like look at what these people did wrong, and you know, we
following shady people to their car.
We did undercover stuff, you know, like it was
five
a lot
on
of,
your side.
It was exactly that kind of stuff, and we would do a lot of that, and that's fulfilling to a point. It also felt a little formulaic after a little while, as important as some of that is. And that kind of, you know, led me to see if, you know, there were some other pursuits like this one that I'd been thinking about for a long time, but it hadn't been done. That was the strange thing to me, was like, how come no one's done this before? A film composer documentary, they're out there, you know, they have interesting things to say and to share, and everyone knows their music. Doesn't somebody want to know something about that?
Yeah, it is kind of weird that it's almost so big that we can't put a face our personality to it. It's just so ubiquitous. Mm-hmm. It fills up every theater and all our minds and our imaginations and our childhoods and everything. But you don't think there's one guy sort of behind this thing. So yeah.
Moby kind of said that in the documentary. Like, it's not tangible, so you don't think about it.
Yeah, when you think about Tom Brady, you picture Tom Brady, and then he throws a football, and it's a very one-to-one kind of relationship. Or Tom Cruise, or any white guy named Tom. But
Tom Arnold.
The music is too big. It's too everywhere. It's transcendent. Mm-hmm. It's like a part of you. It's not.
Well, it ends up being one of the questions we asked a lot of the composers that we interviewed was like, what do you do when you go to Disneyland and you're passing by something and you hear your music? Is that a weird thing? Or, you know, Universal Studios, and they're using your like Transformers theme on everything that they're doing for 3 years at a time. Like, that's a weird thing. And usually you don't get paid anything extra for that. That's just that comes out of whatever the film did. But some of those have started to be used for a lot of other things. Trevor Rabin, a composer, his music was used for President Obama when he gave his election night victory speech. You know, they played that music in the arena he was in.
He didn't seem particularly pleased about that, that right. he wasn't asked.
I think he was flattered, but yeah, the thing is, like, for all of those extra uses, you don't really get paid, you know, and that's as simple as that. You spend a lot of time making something that feels tailored to a movie, and then at some point someone says, hey, that would sound really good underneath something else that's going on. And there's kind of this extra, you know, kind of creative way that it's used that's never really thought about when you're making it in the first place.
So how was it getting hold of the Hans Zimmers and the Trent Reznors and the Brian Taylors or Tylers and that guys like that? Like, how was it? What was the process like? And then how'd you go about it? And well, were they accessible because people don't ask them for interviews that much?
Kind of. There's a difference between, you know, some of the low-level guys and then like the Hans Zimmers and the John Williams and the, you know, Thomas Newmans and some of those people. So we had a different approach for different people, but largely, you know, I came from a news background. I'm used to reaching out to people and, you know, and hopefully hooking them for some kind of an interview. But in this case, it was we're jumping into this field that we haven't really done documentary before. So we're calling someone up and saying, we're working on this documentary. Oh, great. What have you done? Well, nothing yet, but trust us, this will be cool. And there were a handful of people that I think really got on board with the idea from the start. Some different composers. John Debney is one of the first people that we interviewed, and he ended up being highlighted in the film in a number of places. But we realized at a certain point we were gaining enough credibility through the, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 interviews that we had, that we could pretty much reach out to anybody and say, hey, We know you've been hearing a little bit about this in your inner circle about people doing a documentary on this. Can we get an hour, a couple hours of your time for you to show us your studio, chat with us, you know, that kind of stuff? And then it was a lot easier. So by the time we reached out to someone like Hans Zimmer, it was significantly easier than right at the start.
You know, I've never really been like a Nine Inch Nails guy or even a Trent Reznor guy, but like for The Social Network, it was so perfect for that movie.
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
think that a lot of it is not you sort of putting aside your preconceived, well, you like classical, you like techno, you like whatever, and just go, is it right mm-hmm. for what we're doing mm-hmm. here right now, like what you're seeing visually? And I just thought that I don't even know how to describe that as a soundtrack. It was almost like anti-soundtrack.
Yeah.
But it was perfect.
Well, there's this thought when you're making a movie, and this is very kind of like, you know, when someone's putting something together, but more and more people now are doing it on their computers too. But you look for – usually there's some kind of music that's involved in that. And a lot of times it's some stock – trying to find some stock production music that has worked, you know, that kind of matches the rhythm, matches the feeling, you know, all of that for whatever you're putting together. What started to really become evident is as great – as I think a piece of stock music might fit in a scene that we're putting together. And we started out with some pieces of stock, you know, music for the few bits that we needed throughout our film to kind of carry that over. But you realize that it works on one level, but there's all these other levels to the music. And if you can actually have a composer who specializes in that music and finding that rhythm and the things that come off of the screen through the edits and through the colors and through the pictures, they can translate that into this thing that really starts to resonate when you're watching that. And, you know, custom piece of music like that. So we ended up with a great composer of our own that we kind of accidentally ran into, and he put together some things that were way better than the stock, you know, clips that we had tried to use originally.
It's interesting. I did it. I remember doing it in The Hammer. I can't remember if I did it in Road Hard, the other movie. But you sit down at a guy's like house, and he sits at his piano and just kind of does stuff that feels like what might be right for the mood and the feel and the texture of the scene. It's such a great it's really I bring it up every once in a while on the show, which is like this is human beings at their best. This is when humans are at their best. You have the guy. You have the orchestra, you have all the different sections and the woods and the winds and the strings and the guy conceived and the guy made the movie and that guy shot the movie and everyone who worked for behind the camera, in front of the camera, the people who are sewing the wardrobe together, and it all comes into this great thing that involves hundreds, maybe thousands of people at the time, and it all just morphs into one beautiful unit. And, you know, I always say it's like, you know, ISIS is swinging a hammer on a bridge, like at tourists, like that's human beings at their worst. And this is the human race at their best.
It's amazing. And especially when you factor, you know, to have all of those people in a room takes money. You know, so you're a smaller independent film is going to really struggle to have a whole big, you know, robust orchestral score with 150 musicians that are in there and all of the other moving parts that it takes to put that together. So you really see the interesting thing. It's almost kind of some people think of this as kind of, you know, the reverse of what you would expect. But in the big Hollywood films, you know, the movies like Transformers, which, you know, came out. And but just, you know, a couple of weeks ago, the last Transformers movie, which maybe not as great as some of the others.
It was only an A++++. It wasn't, you know, in that rare fight. Yeah.
You're not going to get him on your side on this one. Yeah.
But the music that comes out of that, that, you know, there's the money to be able to research, you know, and all these composers have teams of people that are looking for sounds, and they'll go out, they'll fly out places, record different kind of sounds of different things, try to work those into the score.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I had the thought, and it's almost not worth addressing in the movie, because it doesn't have a wide appeal. But as a film lover, I was like, if you also ask anyone in this room or anyone around here, name your 10, 20 favorite movie scores, you'd name E.T. and Jurassic Park and Star Wars, blah, 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 and you go on. But these will all be great movies, iconic movies, great movies with great scores. How many great scores probably great pieces of music are, let's say, lost to obscurity because they were in an average or bad movie. You know, like, just because a movie's bad doesn't mean the score, like, maybe the guy composing the score is a young John Williams or a young Hans Zimmer, or someone's a great musician who's making a great score that is now kind of lost to history for, you know, it's out there, of course, but, you know, it doesn't have the legs that, you know, and Indiana Jones has. I wonder how many great scores are floating out there.
The reason Titanic's still the best-selling soundtrack of all time, that's not even because of the score. That's because of the song.
Diane
Warren,
like
it's other things that happen that are part of the that are part of the film experience that really make a soundtrack live on, you know, and that theme live on forever. So yeah, I mean, there's some great examples. John Debney, who I brought up, did a great score for a movie called Cutthroat Island. It was a pirate movie.
That's right.
Song in the theater,
biggest bomb of all time.
Gina Davis. Yeah.
And maybe it wasn't the greatest film in the world, but the score is fantastic. And that's one that really only a very select few kind of film score nerds are aware of now.
But, you know, Brian, it's like you'll do this thing every once in a while when you go, you know, some washed up has-been actor you haven't heard from in 20 years, like, what's his name? And you realize you painted yourself in your own corner.
By saying obscure.
I've done that all the time, you know, from the... Melrose Place.
He was in the remake.
You're like, your definition is unknown, washed up, can't remember him, and now you can't remember him because of that.
A movie that Gina and I both love, which is not well loved by the general public, is Cloud Atlas.
Yes.
Has a great score, but I don't know that it would be recognized by anybody because that wasn't a very much seen movie.
And that's the role you take on some of these. You know, a lot of composers don't get that lucky. They don't do the
It has to be
Jaws,
that perfect intersection of
ends up
great
creating.
Movie, great score. Great score can just float off into nowhere.
Mm-hmm. All right, Gina Gratch, shall we do a little news
Let's do it.
Can hang out, crack-wise?
Yeah.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Eat news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
I was just reminded from the documentary really quickly when you were showing talking about Psycho, and nothing to take away from Hitchcock, my God, but how when you see the stabbing scene without the music, it's just not very scary.
Yeah, it doesn't pull you into it.
No, I mean, yeah,
the knife, push you away from
exactly,
it.
Exactly, that moment made me chuckle when I actually realized that too. Well, John McCain suggested on Tuesday that he expects more bombshell revelations to emerge in President Trump's Russia scandal, according to Yahoo News. The Republican senator's comments came after Donald Trump Jr. released an email chain detailing how the meeting was arranged. Now, the emails, which Trump Jr. posted on Twitter Tuesday morning after learning the New York Times was going to publish it before him, reveal how a British music publicist with ties to President Trump offered to arrange a meeting between Trump Jr. and a Russian attorney in the hopes of delivering some dirt on Hillary Clinton. Now, Trump Jr. insists that no dirt on Clinton was ever delivered. But McCain's comments on Tuesday make him one of just two Senate Republicans to comment on the email chain. The other is South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. He said he found the conversation disturbing. Here's McCain talking.
I don't know what Dick Durbin does, but I miss him. Miss the name Dick Durbin.
Does that have the name around in your vocabulary?
There's so many political names floating around now that I don't know what everyone does, but what did Dick Durbin do? And I miss that guy. Richard Durbin, no can do.
Who do you like better, Dick Durbin or Dirk Diggler?
Well, Dirk Diggler's made up.
Yeah, that's...
Dick Durbin exists.
That's earned.
Which one do you like to say more?
I don't know. I like Dick Durbin.
Dick Durbin.
It's reality. Maybe it's Dick Butkus. I don't know. We'll figure it out. I like the alliteration. Here it is.
A quick clip.
Illusions and many stories of meetings and communications and stuff, yeah. So there'll be many more shoes that will drop.
How serious do you think this particular shoe is?
No, but it's certainly another shoe that's dropped that needs to
no
be pursued.
No Air Hirachi.
A lot of shoes.
Somewhere between an espadrille and an UGG. Yeah, well, don't call guys cowards who end up in Vietnamese prisoner of war camps.
Agreed.
He's
comes back to haunt you.
Looking pretty good right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you talked to Gergo since the whole story broke? Have you guys had a reasonable doubt? I don't know when you guys record.
No, since the junior stuff
yeah,
broke?
Yeah, since the emails came, I guess, what, 24 hours ago?
No, we just missed it, okay. I think, the last time we
met. I'm interested to hear what he says.
That will be very
because I've seen people on Twitter, both, you know, the knee-jerk reaction is like, why did he do that? He just killed himself, shot himself with a foot. But I've seen other people be like, oh, that was smart. That was smart that he did that. And I'm curious.
Well, either it was going to be his to do or the New York Times to do. And one looks slightly worse.
It's always
worse.
Better to get out in front of it, yeah. I think.
But the question that nobody's really asked yet is, how did the New York Times end up with this email chain? Who leaked that?
I just assume everyone has everything all the time now.
Yeah, everyone's leaking everything.
It's not even worth doing anything. Eventually, so much. It's like, evidently, at some point, there will be porn with all of us starring on it. On the internet. Yeah.
Eventually.
And then it'll just become ubiquitous, and then it'll be, who cares?
Yeah.
It'll come on a show, and people will be like, hey, you were in that porn movie, right?
God, you look familiar.
Like, wait, what?
Yeah.
So you don't have a sex tape?
Take your pants off. I think I know you.
Is that why I'm here?
Well, it's kind of like tattoos. It was a big deal when someone, like, when you were a kid and someone had a tattoo. Mm. It was a merchant marine or something. Now it's just everyone's got a tattoo, and that's that. You know, that's the way it's going to be with dirt.
Yep. Well, footage of Shia LaBeouf's arrest in Savannah, Georgia shows the actor going off on a profanity-laced tirade to a cop. The star was taken into custody early Saturday morning after he asked a police officer for a cigarette. According to the police report, LaBeouf, quote, became disorderly, using profanity and vulgar language in front of women and children. He reportedly ran away and was later cuffed in the lobby of his hotel. That's where he was caught on a body cam cursing out this arresting officer. LaBeouf's been charged with disorderly conduct, obstruction, and public intoxication. The video is pretty long, but here's the fillet, if you will. It's a clip from the video where Shia is yelling at the cop while he's handcuffed in the back seat of the cop car, and the cop's filling out the paperwork.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Brian? Mm-hmm. Shia LaBeouf, trivia?
Oh, okay.
Project Greenlight, first season.
Was he in that?
Battle Shaker Heights? He was the star of the movie.
Oh, wow.
That won the first season
of Matt Damon and Ben Affleck's Project Greenlight. No kidding.
Yeah, just remember him from that, like when he was 13 or something.
Random. Did not know.
Got to look that up, Gary, just to confirm. But I'm almost positive he was the kid in Battle Shaker Heights.
Well, look how far he's come.
Yep, he was, so says Gary. All right, here we go.
I came up to you trying to be nice, you stupid bitch. I came up to you asking for a cigarette, you dumb fuck. Why would I ask for a cigarette if I was racist, you stupid bitch? I was asking for a cigarette, you said no. I said word. And then you arrested me, you dumb fuck. They got cameras everywhere, you dummy. I got more millionaire lawyers than you know what to do with, you stupid bitch.
Oh, black cop. Unfortunate.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't do that.
He's not
Video
happy.
Just came out while we were doing the show of him in the police station telling a black officer he's going to hell because he's black.
Oh, really?
He got aggressive.
Wow.
Going to hell and you're black, or going to hell because you're black?
Because.
Two very different things.
Well, that's got to be the end of him, pretty much, right?
I think that's
it. These days.
Is he
Although,
mentally
I guess
ill?
He's not doing
he was
any
back on
projects
set.
Now.
He was back on set in Atlanta 2 days later. That's why he was in Savannah.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's filming something. I don't know what.
When's he going to get one of those Lindsay Lohan open letters from the director?
Mm.
Like, you need to change your ways, or we can't
like
do
that. I don't know what he's working on. There's only one guy that's happy about this, and that's Michael Richards. But, because, look, they say time heals all wounds, but not if other people don't fuck up the way you fucked up.
Yeah,
then it just goes on in perpetuity. You need, you know what I mean? Like, we kind of remember the name of the guys who did the last school shooting.
Yeah.
But they get replaced by the next guys who do the school shooting. But if no one ever does another school shooting, you're just the last guy.
Michael Richards has a Google alert of celebrity plus N-word every morning. Please let today be the day.
Right. That's how our society works.
He's filming The Peanut Butter Falcon, which also stars Dakota Johnson and Bruce Dern. It's directed and written by Tyler Nilsen and Mike Schwartz.
All right.
So he I think he has a psychiatric disorder, but I think he gets blacked out drunk, pardon the pun, and just does that.
There was definitely something else going on in this clip,
yeah. All right.
Well, this'll raise your spirits a little bit. The Ledger reports that dozens of beachgoers formed a human chain about 300 feet long to save a family from drowning in Panama City, Florida on Saturday. Two young boys were swimming in the water when they got caught in a rip current and were unable to return to shore. Their mom and grandmother swam out to get them, but they got caught in the rip current. Others heard their calls for help and tried to fight the current to save them, but they also got stuck. I think about 9 people total. So approximately 80 people on the beach joined hands and formed a human chain that extended hundreds of feet out into the water to reach the stranded swimmers and safely pull them back to the beach. Witnesses say that if the beachgoers hadn't gotten there, those people would have been surely drowned. The boy's grandmother, she was stuck out in the water. She suffered a heart attack. She's still in intensive care, but they pulled everybody in. Here's one of the women who helped from the chain. She was at a restaurant watching this.
And she jumped in?
Yeah.
I love that.
I can help these people. I grabbed a man's hand, another man. I don't even know who they were. And I grabbed their hand and just pulled the last girl.
And when you say like human beings at their finest, nobody told them to do this. This was just sort of instinctual.
People are good. We always make it like they're not. But people jump in when there's a car wreck or something like that. They get out. They try to help. Right. You know, that's basic wiring.
Where was this again, though?
Of human beings.
Panama City, Florida.
So I wonder if this is some of that kind of southern thing,
hospitality.
Too. Yeah. Like, do you think that would happen in Malibu? Or if that would happen in, I mean, it wouldn't happen in Santa Monica.
They wouldn't let 80 people congregate on a beach in Malibu.
Yeah, right.
Also, probably not because you'd end up getting sued by the person whose life you saved. You know, that's how LA sort of works. God, do you know who I interviewed in Panama City?
Oh, this ought to be good.
Mike Myers.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, Drew and I did like spring break on MTV in Panama City.
Oh, was this when he insisted on you calling Austin Powers International Man of Mystery?
That's right. Because that's how everyone's going to know it by. So, that's the only time I've ever been there.
Wow.
But good. Remember Hands Across America?
I was pretty young, but I do remember hearing about it in retrospect. Yeah.
Everyone were trying to create some sort of
it was like 84,
human chain.
84,
yeah. 85. How'd that work out?
It gave way to the human centipede, and that's where we ended up. Like, we decided, fuck this, but we're doing that.
Yeah, why don't you put that soundtrack in your movie?
Yeah, some real music.
100% medically accurate. That's the tagline. 100% medically accurate was the tagline. Oh, the best tagline of all time.
Well, Brian, speaking of soundtracks, you have something like kind of an all is lost moment that you could cue up or something a little dangerous. USA Today reports that an iceberg the size of Delaware has broken off from Antarctica and is now floating free. Scientists have been watching for months as a crack in the ice grew. And Wednesday, British scientists confirmed that the 1 trillion ton berg has broken free. They said it could hold together for years, but more likely will break into smaller bergs as it drifts north.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
It's perfect.
You can't do the size of Delaware. No one knows the size of Delaware.
Yeah.
You got to pick a football stadium.
It's the size of Delaware. Oh, wow.
That's big?
Let me ask the 9 people who live there if that's an issue. Yeah, I don't know what size Delaware is. I got to have something.
It's one of our smaller states.
Filling the Grand Canyon and football stadiums and things like that.
That was a Mike Myers joke in Wayne's World. Remember when they were doing the green screen? He's like, hey, it's like, I'm in Texas. It's like, hey, I'm in Delaware.
Yay.
I'm in Delaware. There's nothing to do for Delaware.
Right.
That's true. Yeah, and I haven't, I'm sure by now they have, but I haven't heard anyone as of this show being recorded saying, well, here you go. There's your climate change. You know, melted and broke away. I don't know if that's the answer, but I'm surprised nobody's jumped on that yet.
They will. They have to because something happened.
There's Delaware.
All right.
Okay.
There's Delaware.
Well, Variety reports that Clint Eastwood has tapped Anthony Sadler, Alec Skarletos, and Spencer Stone to play themselves in his next movie. I'm going to tell you. I'm going to remind you why you know those names.
These were the guys on the tube. They were taking the channel.
Look at
and
you.
And they thwarted a terrorist attack.
Correct. It's going to be called The 1517 to Paris. The film will tell the story of the three Americans who stopped a terrorist on a train bound for Paris. The casting move is similar to Gran Torino, which featured an almost unknown cast outside of Eastwood himself. But following the news that this would be his follow-up to Sully, Eastwood began a wide-ranging search for the actors who would play these guys, but it seemed the studio and Eastwood had their choices. At the 11th hour, they decided, you know what? these guys are going to play themselves. Now, sources say that while these guys have good size roles, this is going to be, you know, from childhood and how their friendship grew. So they're not going to be in the whole movie, but it's still a full on lead.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
You really only see that now in music. You know, you see Eminem playing himself.
Right.
You see, you know, like 50 Cent is doing some fictionalized version of his life in a movie.
The only thing I could think of was the guy in Lone Survivor that really doesn't have any lines that was the Lone Survivor. So this does not happen very
often. It's almost like cameos you see a lot, but not really someone actually playing themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about the brother, but the two white guys, I'm thinking LaBeouf and Richards.
Oh, wow.
It's time.
It's time. That's right. All right. Let me tell you what time it is. It's Geico time. Everybody's got the to-do list, man. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. How about you save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance? You don't have to go anywhere. Just go to geico.com. 15 minutes. You could be saving up to 15% or more on your auto insurance. So why not go with Geico? Put that extra money in your pocket. And a little walking around money, a little wham, as we call it. So go to geico.com. 15 minutes could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. It's Geico. All right, let's do one more.
All right. Well, the Wall Street Journal reports that a new survey finds that 67% of women and 50% of men would say they would marry for money. Now, I have the answer of how much the average person would marry for if it was just about money and not about love. Care to guess?
Well, see, it's sort of like when the people talk about arranged marriages. I think statistically they have a better shot.
Yeah.
Because you're not infusing whatever weird, fucked up, whatever you got, baggage from the thing. And that's what is attraction after all. And so in a weird way, this might give you a better shot at happiness than just letting your own bad instincts and you know, the past breathe on today.
Provided they don't go broke.
Although the person taking this survey is probably not the person who's saying, well, statistically, I might have a higher chance of. They're probably like, $1 million, you know.
So what's the number? What number?
You say a million.
Yeah.
What do you think?
That's a guy who lives in Toluca Lake.
It's a nice round number.
Well, see, the reason I think I'm basing this loosely on the $4,500 it would take in this country, in many, many parts of this country, to get your spouse killed. Mm. Like, you pay like $5,000, people will kill
people. You got to factor that
in. He's done some research.
I've been researching quite a bit
on someone else's
computer.
Well, it depends on if you use the Groupon.
And Toluca Lake.
I mean, every time you hear these stories, it's not $50,000. It's $8,000 or whatever. I think
that's true.
We're living in a world, like, again, you live in Hollywood, you hear about all these multi-million-dollar everything, but $100,000 is a lot of money to most folks, and I'll just go ahead and put it at $100,000.
Okay,
I was thinking the exact same thing, but in the spirit of going lower, I'll say 50,000.
All right. Well, Matt, you were the closest.
Yes.
Without going over, the answer, the average price people would pay to marry for just money, not love, $1.5 million.
Wow, ooh,
that's even higher.
So I'll walk up to you with 1.4, like, nope, not interested.
Next.
So I guess divorce is out of the question in this survey here, because I guess
they want
it goes up if you're
settle
there's
for
no
750.
Out.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But then so how much of that is sort of like what you want people to think versus what is actually going on?
Yeah,
because nobody says I'll get married for money and it's not going to cost more than $80,000. Like, nobody does that, right? I think it was the same thing that happened with Trump in the polling. Like, they couldn't find people who'd go, like, I'm voting for Trump. You know, everyone goes, I don't like the guy. And then he wins. Because obviously a certain amount of those people weren't being truthful.
Yep.
This feels inflated to me because people don't want to say,
yeah, here's the answer you want to hear.
I have this theory that
if you
took an attaché case and you put $750,000 in it and you wiggled it in front of most people's faces, they would do a lot more than the hypothetical 1.4 would suggest.
Yeah, I think culturally it's frowned upon to say that this is what you'd marry for. This is not appropriate.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad! That was the news with Gina Grad.
Yeah, wire was loose.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about that.
Gary's having a weird look. What's a weird look for?
I was trying to figure out what Brian was pointing at, too.
Oh, I got it.
Made eye contact with Dawson, pointed at the wire.
All right. I'll tell you about Audible. Stuck in traffic? Turn it into an adventure with Audible. Audible's given my listeners a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audible.com/ace and browse. You can browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. I got my books on there. Dawson's got his stuff on there. Shrinkage is on there, right?
Yes, it is. Read by me and you. Read your own intro.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's all there. So it's not a streaming or rental service. Audible, you own the books. Access them anytime, anywhere from your smartphone. Let's make that next dog walk or stuck in traffic or whatever. Make it a nice, enjoyable learning experience. Go to Audible and check it out. Get a 30-day trial membership for free. Go to audible.com/ace. Start now. We all use it here. I love listening to Audible. Dr. Drew always does. It's just what smart people do. audible.com/ace. All right. The podcasting masterclass in Irvine coming up August 5th. And that starts at 9:30 a.m. So come on out and say hi to us. Corolla Drinks is having a music and comedy event. Loxie is going to be playing there. Dawson's band's going to be playing there. Everybody's going to be there doing comedy and everything else. That's July 29th. South Bay Customs in El Segundo. So just go to adamcarolla.com or Corolla Drinks, or whatever you want, and find out. We got the merch back. We got the Buckslips, the ACS-branded Buckslips. Be a winner, everybody. So go to adamcarolla.com, find out about all that stuff. And what are we missing? I guess we're good. Until then,
score.
I want to thank...
Huh? Score. Pre-order on iTunes now.
Oh, yeah. Pre-order on iTunes. No, you're right.
Score-movie.com.
Select theaters now, but yeah, like what he said. So until next time, Adam Kroll for Dave Damashek and Matt Schrader and Gina Grad, Paul Bryan saying mahalo.
I'll put on my wiener whatever I choose, sir.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show at Adam Carolla Show on the Twitter. Follow Ace on the Twitter at Adam Carolla. Subscribe to Take an E, and you're going to get a weekly dose of inspiration and motivation. Just click on the link at adamcarolla.com. Gina Grad's on the radio weekday mornings at 100.3 The Sound in LA. Tickets and info on all the live podcasts, including the Corolla Cruise in November. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com.